Well, good evening. Thank you for coming back for the second class on Jerusalem. We're going to start on page 46, do a little bit of a review, and eventually want to go through some more history. I got a few more weeks. We just want to lay down some groundwork, then we'll start going through each of the sections of the book, looking at the different findings and different things that they've excavated. So let's first of all, let's bow our heads. I'll pray, and then we'll get started. Father, we thank you for the chance to meet again. We thank you for the great city of Jerusalem. We know that there's a great future for it, and we ask that we may look at these things and stay in track with what the Scripture says, but also, Father, we may learn from history and the archaeology and all the things that have gone before. Again, we thank you for the chance to meet here in this country and ask that you'd open our eyes to Scripture, that we may have a greater appreciation for our heritage. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Well, on page 46, we've just got the review of the layout or the topography of the land. And as we know, there is a valley called the Kidron Valley or Kidron Valley. There is another major valley that's still there today called Gehenna or the Hinnom Valley. Then there's a valley that runs down called the Central Valley that has been covered up since the days of Hezekiah or so, and they've leveled it off so it didn't become a problem, but it was there at the beginning. There is a mountain over here or a mound called the Mount of Olives on this side, on the other side of the Kidron Valley. Olives is over here. This right here is a ridge or another hill. It's called the Eastern Ridge. This part of it's lower here and kind of rises up this way. At the top of this is Mount Moriah. Down at this part right here was where the Jebusite city of Jabesh or Salem was. There's a very important water source right there called the Gihon Springs. It's still there today. So water still flows. It was naturally defended because of the Kidron Valley here. The Hinnom Valley coming around the bottom down on this side, and then the Central Valley coming here. So it was very easily defended. It's very steep. You don't need ropes or anything to crawl up, but you don't want to charge up that embankment with your army try to attack the city. That's what David ran into. The only place to attack the city would be from the north, where you can come right over this hill and come down into the city. And so this is where all the fortification would have been built. There would have been a wall around the city, but the greatest fortification would have been up here. This is where the fortress would, the king's palace would have been, the military base was. And that's where they have excavated a very large building, which they think is David's palace. Okay, so that's the Eastern Ridge. Then you go through the Central Valley. Then over here is another ridge over here called the Western Ridge with Mount Zion on this side right there. So that is basically the layout of the city of Jerusalem. You can see there in the map what you have there. A couple water sources that we'll point out is up in here. The north was the sheep's pool, and that's going to become the Pool of Bethesda. Down in here, the water from the Gihon Springs was channeled down into this area, and this became the king's garden. In Rogel is down in here, kind of it's mentioned several times in the Bible. There's be a water source there. This is probably where Abraham and Melchizedek met, would be in this general area in the Kidron Valley in the king's garden. Melchizedek used Mount Moriah as a place to worship. That is where Abram came and offered Isaac on Mount Moriah. It says very clearly that's what took place there. It was some kind of a worship of God Most High, even in Melchizedek's day. Had a couple questions last week. I know Steve asked a question about the Canaanites. I kind of build Melchizedek up as a great man and the Canaanites as being God worshipers at this time. Yet we learn in the Bible, like in the book of Judges and stuff, they're told to kill all the Canaanites, wipe out all the people there, kill them, drive them out of the land. Well, we need to realize, I think, that even in Abraham's day, there's people that he had covenants with, Mamre, Eshcol, Aner, Melchizedek, believers that were Canaanites living in this land that he had fellowship with. They worked together. They went to war together. They traded together. I think it's easy to assume that they were believers in God Most High, especially since Melchizedek was the priest of God Most High. So the Canaanites in Abraham's day, 2000 B.C., were not what we'd consider wretched, wicked people. If you want to make an example of that or say something that may make sense, I do not want to be judgmental or anything like this, but they would be the Americans of the 1770s, okay? 1770 Americans. And I'm running out of markers here. And so they were a very righteous people. And as time went on, actually 400 years, by the time Abraham or Moses comes out in 1400 B.C., it's been 600 years. By that time, they've been in captivity for 400 years. They come out and the Canaanites need to be wiped out. They've completely become a degenerate group of people. They're wicked. They're filled with disease, all kinds of problems. And God says, wipe them out. That would be maybe like the Americans of, let's say, 2,100. Let's get it up their ways. I mean, it's nothing different than a society going, a cycle of a society that's following God, walk away from God, and go down through a series of cycles of falling apart. And so again, Melchizedek and those people at that time were, that one doesn't erase. Those people at that time were, of course, very righteous people, or at least it appears they would be. So that kind of explains the Canaanites. So as they now watch, I mean, it's not that surprising, because God tells that, now I don't want to switch out of gears here, but when God sends the Israelites in, he says, do not forget to follow my ways. Otherwise, the land, it says, he says, will vomit you out. And again, they disappeared with Nebuchadnezzar when the Babylonian captivity came in, the Assyrian dispersion came in, because they walked away from God. And the Israelites went through the same cycle that the Canaanites had. They were a righteous people in David's day, and within 400 years, they'd fallen apart. And they brought back in again. So it's a cycle that nations go through. Nonetheless, we're looking at page 46. Now look on page 47. And I don't think we looked at these pictures here. But at that top picture, we're standing. When I took that photo, I'm standing. Here's a temple mound up here, Kidron Valley. I'm standing over on a little hill right here, looking over the Hinnom Valley and the Kidron Valley, looking over the city of David. And you can actually see the up there where the Dome of the Rock's at and the wall. You can see the wall of the city, which goes today, goes right here, like up in here. And we're going to talk about that a little bit more. The city of David is right there in front of us. Now, if you can see this, if you can see the shadow right here, that's the Kidron Valley. See how steep that is right there? Can you see the shadow in the bottom or on the just the right side? And then the Hinnom Valley runs up directly going to the left. And so that little bit of a ridge right there, that is the city of David. Now, if you look down below, the picture below it, it's the exact same photo. Well, it's almost the same photo. You can see it kind of laid out a little bit more. Can you see it kind of figure those things out there? Mount Moriah would be where the Dome of the Rock's at. And the city of David, you're dropping down there where I've got Eastern Ridge or the Old Ancient Core. That's this western ridge or eastern ridge right here. And so that is, again, where the city of David would have been. Can you see the Mount of Olives? Then you roll down the Mount of Olives down into the Kidron Valley. You can kind of see a shadow there as you slope up into what would have been the city of David. Now notice the Central Valley. It's kind of hard to see it because it's not there. The Central Valley is gone. It's been filled in over time, going way back to 700 BC when they started filling it in. And then the western ridge is over there. Now go just while we're there, not while we're there, but go to the next page. Go to page 71. And I'm going to show you a couple more pictures of the city of David. The city that Melchizedek and the Jebusites would have had. And you can see right there, all of those pictures are showing you a view of, let's go to the first picture on page 70. You've got a picture there of the city of David. And then in the background, you can see the where Solomon expanded the city in the day and on into the days of Jesus where the Temple Mount was at. But that's the original city of David. If you look on page 71, now we're looking at the city of David from this vantage point right here. And you can kind of see where the walls would have been. You're looking over the Kidron Valley. You can also see Mount Moriah on top of page 71. Mount Moriah on the top right corner of that photograph up there where it says north or says Mount Moriah. That's what it would have looked like in Melchizedek's day. David's day. If you look where it says south in the bottom left corner of that picture on page 71, that would be right around where Enrogel's at. That's kind of where the Hinnom Valley and the Kidron Valleys meet. That would be a good place to assume in that area where David might have met Melchizedek in that Kidron Valley. That would have been a very luscious, the King's Gardens through that time up through the days of Solomon and on. And that kind of gives you a feel for it. Now, let's go, please, look at some other things here. At this time? No, that was where the people lived. They lived inside those walls for protection. Yeah, it's 15 acres, with 3 of those acres being actually on the slope going down into the Kidron Valley. So you've got 13 acres. Again, it's not a large city. It's not a big place. There's no major highways, no major interstates. It was off the beaten path, surrounded by some nice valleys with a great water source in the Gihon Springs. So it was a very nice rural city It's going to expand, obviously, but it's not going to be anything massive. It's a lot bigger today. And this is, you can see in the background of those pictures, you can see the skyscrapers there towards the top of the picture. That's the modern city of Jerusalem. Go back to page 45. Back to page 45, and just something else that's interesting right here. Now we're looking at the topography, that little picture at the bottom of that page. You can see the topography. We're standing south, if you would, looking up at the city of David. And you can see the Mount of Olives there on the right side, how high that is. See how it comes down a long slope coming down into the Kidron Valley. The little part there that's all dotted, the dotted part in that photograph or the image that I drew, that's fill. That stuff that's been built in, like, for example, the Central Valley's been filled in, and the Kidron Valley's had some fill, so it was originally deeper, and the city's kind of expanded out as far as, because when cities are destroyed, the rubble goes down and they build on top of it, especially, like, you know, in our day, you know, we have houses or buildings built out of steel or sheetrock and wood or something, but in this time, when they'd knock over the city walls or knock over the buildings, they'd be rock, they'd just fall down, settle in, they'd fill in and just keep building on top of them. Or you reuse some of the rocks. So we're looking again at the diagram on the bottom of page 45. You can see where Mount Moriah goes up, and you can see the Temple Mount, where the Temple Mount is going to be built on Mount Moriah. Then you can come over on Mount Zion and kind of see where Herod's palace is sitting at, or the citadel. We'll talk about that here in a few weeks. We'll talk about the New Testament times. That is where the citadel or the western part of the city was built. And then you've got the Hinnom Valley. And then you're moving on to the left of that photograph on into the hill country of Judea, where you just have more and more rolling hills continuing. But that gives you a topography of what it was like to look at it. For example, that picture we're just looking at. Let's go to page 20 now. And this is interesting to get a perspective here. On page 20 and 21, we're now going to shift gears about 4,000 years. And I think we should just talk about this so we get a handle on it. This, again, is the Kidron Valley. Hinnom Valley comes around here. Here's the city of David where, you know, the Gihon Springs, the 15 acres. But when we, and if you look on the first picture on page 20, what you're looking at is if you went to Jerusalem today, you checked into a hotel in the old city of Jerusalem, this is the city you'd be checking into. I want you to notice where the city of David is at. The city of David is, in that diagram on page 20, it's in the bottom right of that diagram outside of the city walls. In other words, the walls today go something like this. Okay, we'll just do this quick. Here comes up, over comes down like this. That's a rough drawing of the city walls. The Temple Mount is right here today. The Dome of the Rock sits right there. The Church of the Holy Sepulchre, where Jesus was crucified, is right up in this general area. You can see more details on the map there that's in your book. You notice right there. I'm using this for reference. You need to use the image in the book there for the details. And then there's several gates, the Joppa Gate, the Zion Gate, because you're on a Mount Zion, the Dung Gate, where they used to bring the dung out. Over here, the Eastern Gate, that's walled shut. Herod's Gate, up on this side, this is where Herod's palace used to be. Or they thought they found Herod's palace, which was not the case. The Damascus Gate is right here, one of the major gates. The New Gate is right here. But anyway, those gates are there today. The city is divided into four quarters. Let's do something like this here. This kind of comes up more like this. We'll do something like that for our four quarters. One, two, three, four quarters today. Now, in these four quarters, they're divided up between four groups of people. This is the Jewish quarter over on this side. I've got these jumbo markers. You see how nice and big they are? They look good on the camera because you can see them. But I've used this red one works, but it doesn't erase very good. I've used them. I bought... about 3 years ago, I bought maybe 12 of them. I found them online. I thought, well, that'll be enough. Well, they're going dry, and now I can't find them anymore. So if you can find them online or find jumbo markers somewhere, but this company, Foray, stopped making. I guess I was the only person that was using them. But anyway, the Jewish quarter, today, if you go there, this is the Jewish quarter. Up to the northeast, that is the Muslim quarter. Muslims live there. Now, you can walk back and forth. If you went there and visited, you could walk between these. You could just kind of tell a difference in culture, although it's all Middle Eastern culture, but you can tell a little bit of a difference. Yes?
Do the Muslims have that call to prayer
Yeah, seven times a day. Yeah, 2 o'clock in the morning, whatever it is. Yeah, the first few nights it wakes you up. Yep, definitely. Yep. Yep, the Muslim call for prayer. There is, this is the Christian quarter where the Christians are at. And this is the Armenian quarter. And the Armenian is from, they're people from the country of Armenia. And they became Christians early before the days of Constantine. They became Christians and moved to the holy city way before the days of Constantine. I've got it written here in these notes. We'll take a look at it here in just a little bit. I think it was like in the 200s or something, they became Christians. Okay, over there on page 21. They did this in 301 was when they became a Christian nation, and they have had a presence here in Jerusalem since 301. They speak very good English. Many of them do. They're definitely Christians, but they're not Orthodox Christians. They're not Catholic Christians. They're not Protestant Christians. They're Christians that have had a heritage going back to the earliest days of Christianity. So you've actually got two groups of Christians. But this Christian quarter up in here now, you're going to find within there, you're going to find all kinds of things. You're going to find Ethiopian Christians. You're going to find Greek Orthodox Christians. You're going to find Roman Catholic or Latin Christians. Not a lot of Protestant presence here in this part of the city or even in Jerusalem. Protestants, they came too late. You know, the Protestants, 1500s, where the Protestants made their move. By that time, everything's been claimed in the Holy City for the last 1500 years. So we have no presence in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. There's like six or seven different churches or religions that are Christian groups that are there navigating through the space and having little territorial wars with each other. A lot of territorial wars as far as space among the Christians and then between the Muslims and the Jews, trying to find who's got what positions. And that comes back to the question about the call to prayer. It is not only a space issue, it is also who controls the airwaves. Because you complain about the Muslims and their Muslim call to prayer. As soon as they get done with their Muslim call to prayer, it's time for the churches to ring their bells. Ding, 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 to worship God their own way. So you've got to continue. Everybody's trying to bid for some kind of space here in the holy city between the Jews, the Muslims, and the Christian groups. And that's the holy city today. But I do want you to notice the city of David is outside. It is today called the city of Silwan. It's on both sides, on the eastern ridge here and on the over here on the Mount of Olives. It's a Palestinian city, so they'd be Muslims. When you hear of conflict, a lot of times people throwing rocks and different things like that, it's down here in Silwan. Because the Jews and the Christians and myself want to come down here and take photos and excavate because this is the city of David. This has got a lot of things there. I mean, a lot of archaeology, a lot of these photos in this book are from Silwan. But, of course, there's people living on top of that stuff. It'd be like people wanting to excavate your front yard every day. And it's like that'd be neat for a while, but the visitors never go away. As soon as someone digs a hole and finds something, now you've got buses stopping there taking photos of it every day. And it's like this is where they live. They're not thinking history. They're not thinking necessarily, you know, religion necessarily. They're thinking, I've got to get up and go to work tomorrow, and everybody else in the world is coming here to take photographs of Hezekiah's tunnel, and they want to dig more. And that tunnel I told you about, or that roadway going from the Temple Mount down to the Pool of Siloam down here, we talked about that last week, they're excavating that right now. And, of course, there's a lot of problems in that area there, I mean, as far as the tension. Let's look on these pages, page 20. Let me just walk through these quarters. I can tell you this. Give you some information again. Some people like this kind of stuff. Some people do not. There are, living in the Muslim quarter, there are, we got, let me get this right here. Let me see my numbers here. Okay. We got 25,000 Muslims living there. 77% of the old city lives in the Muslim quarter. We've got 2,300 Jews living in the Jewish quarter. We've got 2,461 Armenians living here, and we've got 5,276 Christians living here. The Muslims are definitely the heavily populated area. Probably not. There could be. There's no papers. You can go. No. There is a street. I mean, you know, this side or that side, but if you were a Muslim, you wouldn't want to live over here. I mean, you just wouldn't want to. But again, this is by no means, this is not the limit of where people live. the Jews, of course, they've gone across and are living in the West Bank and different places. They live up here in the modern city. There's Christians, you know, all around. Muslims live all around. These are Muslims down here in Silwan. So again, this is not just the only place to live, but no, they I don't think it's illegal to live, but you just wouldn't. It'd be real hard to, you know, buy a house, you know, get an apartment. It just wouldn't be kosher, nor would you want to. Many of them go here, but this again, this is pretty saturated right now. They would live other places, like out in the West Bank, or live someplace, settlements or something that they're building, or live up in this city. All you got to do, you can live across the street over here. Right. I don't know about that, but it's not here, I don't think. I don't think so. Let's look at this Jewish quarter. I'll tell you some information about it. This is within the walls of the old city.
And then outside of it.
Right. Right. Yes.
So you've got to see the city
modern. Right.
See it outside
that wall. Right. Yeah, the city's growing. You know, New Jerusalem is up here, not in the New Jerusalem we have in the Bible, but you can go, like in the evenings, we'd take a walk up in here and go up into a newer city, and there'd be things going on, Jews living up in here. Right. Right. Yep. Yeah, those buildings they're talking about, I don't think they're in the city. What I was going to do is the Jewish quarter. If you look on page, I want to read this where I got the Jewish quarter. Yeah, right there on page 20. Some things about the Jewish quarter. I'll just read this for you. It's a thriving modern community. More than 1,000 families live there. It has been rebuilt out of the rubble that was left from the Jordanian occupation from 1948 to 1967. So from 1948 to 1967, up till 1967, Jordanians or Jordan occupied this, or Muslims occupied this. And then in the War of 67, the Jews took this up to the temple. In fact, they took the Temple Mount. And so at that time, 1967, since the destruction was so severe during that time period, 1948 to 1976, just destroyed it. There's nothing left. The walls were left from the 1500s that still stand today. That what they did, and you can see this today, they decided before we rebuild our part of the city of Jerusalem, let's excavate it. What they want to do all around down here, the Jews did it to their own place first. They and when you get there, there'll be tunnels, there'll be places to go underground. They got things marked. If they didn't find anything, nothing worth keeping, they filled it in and they started building. If it was worth keeping, they put posts up, put some kind of a ceiling in it, and they started building up on top of it so you can still come down and see the remains. And we got a lot of pictures from this area here. So this has been very well excavated, the Jewish quarter, because of that. They wanted to see what was there to prove we were here 4,000 years ago. And then they built on top of it. So again, the city there now then, this is a very clean, very modern portion of the city. Okay? Today, there are numerous synagogues, schools, contemporary shops and restaurants. It's a really a fun place to go if you like just going from little shops, really knick-knack shops. Not knick-knacks. I mean, nice, nice things. The Roman Cardo, I don't have a picture of it on this page, but when we go through the history, Rome, they took over the city in 135. And they built it up the way they wanted to. And Rome always had a northwest street and a east-west street. The northwest street was always called the Cardo. And they've excavated this Cardo that runs through the Jewish center. And you still see the pillars, the pavement. The Jews excavated that Cardo. And they used to have to be full of shops. And what they did then, after they excavated it, they turned those shops into modern shops. And they still use the Roman Cardo from the days of 200 A.D. We'll talk about that, the Roman Cardo, the Cardo street. It was then taken over by the Byzantine Christians. The next thing, the Muslim section on page 21, up in this area. You can see I've got some pictures there of the Jewish quarter on page 20. Now we're in the Muslim quarter. We're actually walking up the street called El Wad, which goes right up to the Damascus Gate. In fact, you can see the Damascus Gate. I'm walking up the street, and you can see the Damascus Gate right there. And Muslims just walking in there in the street, shops. Now, what's interesting is, and there's several things happening here, but there's a road right here. This is called Via Della Rosa. It comes in right here through Stephen's Gate, goes right up to the Church of Holy Sepulchre. A lot of things there that people had marked. It runs right through the Muslim quarter. And so now the Muslims are not foolish. the Christians are visiting this place all the time. So when you stop at a Muslim shop right there in the Muslim quarter, guess what they're going to be selling you? Your choice of any plastic cross, wooden cross, nativity scene, whatever you want, we've carved it out of everything we can think of. Would you like to buy one? It's like, yes, but they're Muslims. Yes, but you've got the money and you want a cross from Jerusalem, and most people don't know you're in the Muslim quarter and some Muslim carved it somewhere or whatever, it's some factory. They bought it from China, whatever, and they're going to sell it to you right there. So it's kind of interesting. You're in the Muslim quarter, the call to prayer and going on, and they're trying to sell you a Christian cross because you're just a few feet from the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. Again, so I mean, it's not taboo to have Christian items as long as you're selling them to the Christians. It's just kind of interesting. The Muslim quarter is the largest and most populated of the four quarters, developed by Herod the Great. Again, when we talk about this part of the city was developed by Herod the Great as the city expanded. We'll get to that eventually. It's full of churches. The Christian Crusaders, remember, we'll talk about this historically, they came in and took over the whole thing. And so there's Christian churches scattered all across in these areas here that have remained. Some of them, there's a Crusader church that's still there by the Pool of Bethesda, but they've been taken over by the Muslims. And more things there. It says when Jesus walked these streets, the busyness of the street, people trying to sell you stuff, would have been just like Jesus in Jesus' day when he was walking through the streets. It would have been just like that. The Armenian quarter, there you've got a lady sitting there. She works for her father. We've talked to her a couple of times. The Armenian pottery, where they lay it out, they draw on it, then they paint in great detail. You may be familiar with it. We always try and buy something there. Because it's kind of neat. My wife really likes it. And she goes to Jerusalem, I can buy her some pottery. And so, that's what she's doing. She's painting the Armenian pottery right there. Nation from Armenia, I told you about this. They established it on Mount Zion. They've been living in Jerusalem since 95 BC. Now, if you think about it, that's the Apostle John would have died around 98 AD. So they've been, I don't think that's right. And Martin's been living there since 95 BC, right before the Crusade. I don't know if that's right. I think I might have BC wrong. I'll have to go and check my notes. Some other things right there. Many of the Armenian women became Crusader queens because they're so beautiful. The Crusader kings would marry them, so the Armenians would be marrying to the Crusaders. And then the picture of Silwan. We talk about Silwan right here and over on this side. That photograph that you see right there on page 22 is actually a photograph of Silwan as it looks right there. And that's what you see right there. It's just house upon house. It's on the slope of the Mount of Olives, right across from the old city of David. A lot of that stuff right there it's built on tombs. This was a place in the Old Testament. A lot of people were carving tombs over here in the side of Mount of Olives. In fact, you can still see some of them, and they still bury a lot of them there today. A lot of people, or Jews, are buried there. But these old graves, tombs, they've just built right on top. They use them for water cisterns, or they use them for basements. That's what they have there in Silwan. Okay, that is the modern city. Let's just, while we're looking at this, take a look at the modern walls. I want to probably come back and look at this later. Just walk through this. As we go around this blue line right here, these are the walls. Again, I'm going to point out to you, on page 20, those are the walls we're looking at. Those are the walls I'm talking about right now. They were built in 1537 to 1541 by Suleiman the Great, or Suleiman the Magnificent, one of the leaders of the Muslims coming out of Turkey, out of the Ottoman Empire. He built them mainly because of the Crusades. The Crusaders kept coming in and attacking the city. They'd have to fight them. So he just said, we're going to build a wall around these city, around the city. Actually, what he wanted was a wall around everything that was considered holy, including the city of David down here like this, and Mount Zion, which is over on this side. His architects that spent those 5 years building, in 1537, 1541, that time, building these walls, failed, and they could not get each. What they decided to do, let me see if I can tell you this quickly. Each group of people that were there in the 1500s had to come up with the finances to build the wall to protect their portion of the city. Because the people living over here on Mount Zion could not get their act together, the architect said, fine, you can live outside the city. So when invasion comes, tough luck. And they didn't put Mount Zion or the city of David in there. When Suleiman the Great came down to visit and saw that Mount Zion and the city of David, these things were not included in the city walls, he executed the two architects. And you can see their graves are right. You can see on page 24, there are two graves. He thought they did a fine job. So right here by the Joppa Gate, you go into the Joppa Gate. You can see there's nice weeds growing on them and stuff. You know, they're just, you know, they've been there for 500-600 years. You can walk in the Joppa Gate right here, look to the left, and those tombs or those two graves are right there of where those two architects were decapitated and buried. They did a great job. They're buried with honors, but they got decapitated because you didn't do what Suleiman the Great wanted. And he's called Suleiman the Great or Magnificent because if you do what he says. That's why he's called that. Yes, they do have. There's electricity there, yeah. I'm trying to think. I'm not sure how it comes in. You can when you get down into the city, and you know I've got some, these are just photos. Well, you can look on page 25 at the bottom. You see the lights coming up on the wall there. That wall right there is this west wall right here. Now, when I say west wall, I don't mean the western wall of the Temple Mount. It's just the west wall of the city. But yeah, they've got lights. A lot of times it's very neatly done, especially in the Jewish quarter. But up here in the Christian quarter, the Muslim quarter, for example. It's, you can just see years of patchwork of just, you know, once this was no longer needed, they disconnected and ran something new right here. The old is still hanging there. And you go back, you know, 100, 200, 300, well, you can go back, you know, 2,000 years, they still have stuff just there they haven't gotten rid of. Yes? Again, you've got a wide range of people. I mean, you've got some people that are there just for business. They're just living their lives. They grew up there. It's not that big a deal. Others have moved there or they've been raised to really appreciate what they've got. Some are very sensitive to the historical value, but a lot of them are very sensitive to the political agenda that's going on. And so when you get, there's a wide range. They know, most everybody knows they've got a money machine. I mean, that's what it comes down to. It's like that's, you know, Monday morning, what matters? This is a great historical site, or hey, people want to see my front yard. Okay, put a fence up, put a wall around it, and for $5, you can come in and look at it. You know, I mean, so you've got a lot, it almost has, in some sense, it almost has like a Disneyland amusement park, you know, Adventureland feel to it at different places. And if you've got a yard that there's nothing there, you know, then you make up a story. You know? And Saint Anne did something here, or Mother Mary did something here. And if you tell people that long enough, and people come over there uneducated, they come over there, it's like, wow, and they take a picture of this thing. So you've got as many fables as you have got historical things happening there. So yeah, it's a wide range of what's going on there.
Within the city now, where all these divisions are, they're not separated by walls.
No. Like,
what, streets?
Yep. And you can actually find the streets. In fact, I think on that map on I go back to page 20. I think you can, I don't have it marked on there very good. But yeah, those are the streets. They would divide it up. Yeah. And there's no barriers. You don't know you're moving from one place to the other, except, things begin to change. You know, I mean, you can sell the like I say, the Jewish quarter is very new, very well organized. Muslim quarter is very crowded, a lot of streets, a lot of shops. Christian quarter, you're going to have a lot of crosses, you know, a lot of churches. But again, when you think Christians, you're not talking white European Protestants, not at all. I mean, these people, these Christians are what they are. Well, they're Palestinians that have become Christians at some point, either in their lives or their families become Christians. So these people, in a sense, the Christians and the Muslims, in many cases, are Palestinians. They could be relatives. It's just these have stayed with the Muslim faith, and these have gone with the Christian faith. So, I mean, they're all Palestinians. Yes. Oh, yes. Yes. Again, I'm talking like an expert here, okay? I mean, do not let me fool you. It's like, wow, well, Galen knows. No, I don't. But I do know, like, for example, when they're tunneling on the western wall right here, then they came up on the outside. They came through a gate. They actually came out of an ancient wall gate. The Jews came up into the Muslim quarter, and there were some like 16 people or 8 people were slaughtered right there. They had a riot, just killed them right there in the streets. It'd be like just coming out of Walmart, just getting slaughtered by the parking lot attendants. It's just don't be here. You just don't go certain places. So down in here, you're like Tony had rocks thrown at her down here in the Kidron Valley by some kids from Silwan. So yeah, there's always there's the Jews politically. Now this is a good question. The Jews are a good answer. You didn't ask the question yet, but the Jews control this. This is Jewish territory. And they let the Muslims stay here. The Jews, they have these divided. So when you go in the Muslim quarter, there'll be Jewish police in the Muslim quarter ruling, controlling what's going on there. They have jurisdiction. They have given the Temple Mount to the Muslims. So the Muslims have jurisdiction on the Temple Mount because it was given back to the Muslims for that reason. Interesting to see how that's going to play out here in the future. Again, we talked a little bit about how they're kind of, in many cases, they again, coming from my perspective, they're abusing it, kind of destroying any kind of evidence up there by digging and dumping the pulverized remains out in the Kidron Valley. So anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yep. Right. Yep. Right. Right. Yeah.
But there was a lot of
right. Right here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now
there is a difference between the police and the military.
Yeah.
The police are going to have the light blue shirts on, and the military are going to have the green. Okay. Really? On the Temple Mount. Okay. Yeah. You'll see a lot of the military at the Western Wall. But once you go up to the Temple, you go up, enter the Temple Mount, you're checked by Jewish police. The Jewish military or police will check you and scan you. Yep. Because they... Right.
If they weren't there, you probably wouldn't get out of
here. Right. Yeah, that's true.
They
right.
There to protect.
And they've all got guns strapped across their back.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's like it's.
But they're there for the purpose of people coming in there so that they're okay, not because they're concerned about.
Right. I never saw anybody shoot a gun, but I saw guns all over. In fact, when you go to the Holocaust Museum, there's a sign on the door that says, "Please check weapons here." So it's like everybody's unloading their guns, you know. So it's a different world, you know, different world. Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm. Yes, they do. On the Temple Mount, and there's a group overseeing the antiquities, the archaeologists overseeing this. There's a group, but you've got the political tension, and so if they start doing something, you're going to have to somehow convince them to stop them. And the Jews will be throwing fits going to this board that oversees it, and they don't move because it's like they're paralyzed because of the Muslims will riot or they'll burn something, they'll blow something up. And it's kind of like, you know, once again, to me, the Temple Mount and the archaeological soil there is very, very important. But if you live there and you wanted to have your roads clear so you can get to work on Monday, you don't want to riot with the soil that's 4,000 years old. I mean, who really cares? What the people that are doing the voting and they want civil order, they don't want to riot every week because of some archaeological thing. Just let them destroy it. So, I mean, there's that tension there of what I think is important as a student and what they think is important as a parent or as an employee or a business owner or something. So a lot of times they let things slide that we would say absolutely not. You know, it's a different perspective. Yep, I mean, according to what I think eschatologically, I think right here is where the temple's going to be rebuilt right here on this Temple Mount. And the Muslims occupy it. They've occupied it since 600 AD. They've had control of that. That's why the Dome of the Rock is still there. So when you start talking about the Jews having access to the Temple Mound, there's going to have to be some kind of an agreement with the Muslims. Either the Muslims completely disappear from the earth, the Muslims no longer want the Temple Mound. Now, the Dome of the Rock is a holy site, but right here is the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And that is the third most holy site in Islam. And so the Dome of the Rock is important. But it's really this Al-Aqsa Mosque, which is the third most holy place. So they don't want any, and we'll talk about that more when we get talking about the Temple. They don't want to lose that, and they're not just going to give it away. So whatever transpires for the Jews to get up there is going to be very interesting to see how that plays out. And I think it will, according to my eschatology. And different people have different views, but I think it's pretty clear. I will tell you this, too, as we mentioned this. There is a place in the Jewish quarter called the Temple Institute, and you may have heard about it or at least heard talk about it. I've been there a couple times. The first time I went by myself and just kind of looking for it, I couldn't find it one day. I went and looked the address up. I walked right by it. It's a little storefront, nothing fancy. Temple Institute. I'm thinking, here it is, And you walk into it. It's got all the nice features. It's like a little shop. It wasn't anything. It's like thinking Generation Word is like an international ministry. Where's the headquarters? It's like, it's in our bedroom across the hallway. It's like, well, it's not that big of a deal. Well, anyway, we went and got a tour of it the first time. Tony and I went there this last time we were there and actually got in on a session. I'll tell you a little bit about it. They have got everything built. Now, if this ties to, this is the truth, but if it matches, I can't tell you what's going to happen in the future, but I can tell you that they have everything ready to go for the temple. They've got the priest's garments. They've got all the furniture. I held in my hand because I was sitting in the front row during this thing, and they had the candelabra, the Jewish the menorah for the temple, and they take one of these things off made out of gold. They could take this off right here, the little where the incense is going to burn or the oil is going to be in. And they said, "Would you hold this?" So I step up and I'm holding this. We can't take pictures. They wouldn't let us take pictures, otherwise you'd see, so you know if it's true or not. But it's like, I want to take pictures, but you can't. But I'm holding this so everybody can see, and it was heavy. It sits right on the golden menorah that's going to sit in the temple that's going to be rebuilt if it all fits together. This will be the menorah that's in the Antichrist temple, and I'm holding it. Now, they had everything else there too. But they also had over, that they just had finished, an altar, a stone altar. It wasn't that big. It's designed to be picked up with a forklift and driven up to the Temple Mound. So the day that peace treaty is signed, they said, we don't know if it's going to be a... This is the Jews talking. This is not the Christians with their Christian eschatology when Jesus is going to come back. These are the Jews talking about right now what they're planning on doing. They say if it's a peace treaty, if it's an earthquake, or if it's an act of war, we are going to get back on the Temple Mound. And when we do, the minute we have access to it, that altar is going up on the Temple Mound, and we will be sacrificing that afternoon. The evening, if they sign the peace treaty at 9 o'clock on Thursday morning, Thursday night, the evening sacrifices for the Jews will be offered on the Temple Mound. They are ready to go. And then, of course, then they've got to build the temple. They can offer the sacrifice according to the law of Moses with this. It's a stone altar with non-cut stone that they've built that's ready to go. So it's all, the rabbis are overseeing it. Everything's kosher and ready to go. Once they get access, then of course they'll throw up their temple. And if you go online, they've got details, unbelievable details. You have 3D movies. What do you call those? Simulation where you can just walk around and look at all the buildings they've got planned for the Temple Mount. They've got the plans. They've got the plans for all their buildings are drawn up, and they've got things set aside. It's if they get access, they're going to get it done. It's the Temple Institute. You can Google Temple Institute, look it up. Yep, it's going to be Jews from around the world pumping money into it. Yep, because there's Jews, they're planning on... It's funny how Christian theology and eschatology is saying this is what we think, and then you watch the Jews who completely disregard the New Testament, and it's like, well, you're doing exactly what our eschatology, at least the way I read eschatology, some people read it differently, is saying is going to happen. Right. Oh, no doubt about it. And about that time, he saw a little red dot right on his chest. A little. Yeah. Don't rock. No, because, and we used to be able to, But an Orthodox Jew went in there loaded with dynamite, and they caught him, and they said, we're shutting the Dome of the Rock down. So you could, otherwise you could go in there and see the Dome of the Rock, which would be kind of neat too. Okay, well, we are, I hope you're enjoying that and learning something. We're kind of meandering around, not even in the book right now. But here we go. We're going to go back to the book a little bit here. And here is, we're going to talk about these walls. And this is a pathetic drawing of the walls of the Temple Mount right here. Just kind of give you a reference here. When you go into the Joppa Gate, you're going to see those two tombs on page 24. On page 24 also, the top right photo, all around the wall, these are where they would shoot arrows from. And you can step up inside there, and you can see how it's designed. It's a small slit on the outside. All you can see is a slit like this on the outside. But on the inside, you can see how it's angled. You can kind of move in there at an angle. There's room to get an archer or two in there. And they use that to shoot arrows at the approaching crusaders. And then, of course, they shot rifles when they had, the different wars that they've had. Here's a close-up picture on the bottom of page 24, the bottom right photo. There we are actually in that. We're on the Temple Mount. Right there, I crawled up into one of those on the Temple Mount or right up next to it and took a photograph. And I'm looking over the Kidron Valley from the Temple Mount, from the eastern wall, at one of the tombs that is carved in there. It was carved during the first century or so A.D. And you can kind of see. So that's what an archer would have seen as he looked out of that. On the bottom left of that page, you can see one of those called arrow loops or loopholes, where it looks from the outside. So if that's what you're shooting at, you can see someone's gun coming out of that or an arrow coming out of that, and you're trying to shoot into that and shoot the archer. And of course, they've got the advantage. That's why they're on the wall. On page 25, something very interesting. I don't know if I can say this word. Machicolathon. You can try to pronounce it yourself. You can probably do a better job. But that is a little deck, you could step out onto that or into that. It's a floorless little, balconies. Thank you. That's what I'm trying to think. It's a little floorless balconies you can step out in. And what you do, they're over the top of the gate. You can see it's on top of a gate right there. And they would pour boiling water or boiling oil. Historians discuss that, and from my research, both would be possible. They would, you're approaching the wall, and you're trying to ram the door in on the gate because there's only seven gates, and everything else is a solid wall. So you're attacking the gates. If you come up there, they'd pour oil on you. There's accounts of battles of that being described. What happens is, especially if it's oil, it gets into under the armor, it gets into the skin, it doesn't cool off, and just pretty much just, burns through their skin. And of course, it's a detriment. On the bottom of page 25, we've got the Western Wall. Actually, what we're doing is I'm standing right here by the Joppa Gate. I'm looking right up the wall like this one evening. So I'm just standing right there looking up that wall. So that's what that wall looks like. Turn the page. Boy, we got a lot of details here. I'm going to save this so I don't bore you with all this information here. On page 26, you've got the Western Wall. Now, excuse me, when I say Western Wall, I should be very careful because there's the Western Wall of the Temple, which is one of the holy sites we're going to talk about. This is that would be right here, Western Wall. This is the West Wall of the city. And it's very interesting because you've got, on that diagram on the top of page 26, you've got from the southwest corner right here, coming up to about the Joppa Gate, the details of some archaeological remains. Now, that wall remains, for example, right there on a... Well, man, I could go through all of that with you. But part of that is the wall that Herod built was in many cases built on the top of where the Old Testament wall would have been built. Because sometimes just the rock line, because there's rock coming up out of the ground, it's just a good place to build the wall. So when the wall got knocked over, they come back a few years later, they built the same place. So some of these walls follow the same general pattern. In this case right here, you can see it's following, but there's a couple things. It's called the Herodian Wall or Herodian Tower or Herodian Gate. That city gate right there, it's from Herod's day. You can see the little markings on the top of page 26. If you go over to the middle of page 27, I'm looking at that city gate. I'm now standing with my back to the Western Wall right here, looking this way at the remains of a city gate from Herod. So that would be where Herod's wall used to be, and that used to be a gate into his city. That means right behind us, or right in this general area here, is where Herod's palace would have been. It's now the citadel, so this is going to be play out very interesting, because this may be where Jesus was taken when he was tried before Herod. When Pontius Pilate sent him to Herod, he would have been taken to the citadel over in this part of the city, so we're very close to where that would have been. I mean, there's all kinds of details there in the pictures. If you go on page 27, over there to the far right, the small picture towards the bottom on the right side, we're looking down. Now I'm standing right up in here. I'm standing up here in the citadel, looking down this way, down the western wall from the inside. And you can see the Hinnom Valley. You see right there the Hinnom Valley that runs right there where that road, that's a huge, that comes around this way, the huge Hinnom Valley or Gehenna. I could tell you more about those things. You actually want to read the details there. On page 28, we're now talking about the north wall right here. And again, it's not as straight as I've got it drawn right here. There's three gates in this wall. The new gate, which is a very small gate that was just recently cut out in the late 1800s. There's the Damascus gate, which is the most magnificent gate of all of them. That leads to Damascus. If we had left that city, we would have gone to Damascus. And then Herod's gate, because they thought at one time they found Herod's palace there, and they mislabeled the gate. Anyway, this is the wall on the north of the city on page 28. You see how majestic it looks. On page 29 at the top, you've got the eastern wall. Now we're looking down this wall right here. And right here is the eastern gate, also called the Golden Gate. It is where the Messiah is supposed to come in, that when he comes from the Mount of Olives, comes in that eastern gate or the Golden Gate. You can see it right there. You can see it's walled shut. Now you can see there's graves in front of it. All those are Muslim graves, because the Muslims have buried on this side, outside this wall. They use this as the cemetery. It's because it makes it unclean for the Jews. That way the Jewish Messiah will be less likely to want to come in that way. The reason it's blocked shut, it was blocked shut for years, and the Crusaders, when they had it, they'd always unblock it for some Easter holiday or something, and then they'd block it shut again. But it's been blocked shut for many years now. We'll talk about it more. But really, the reason it's blocked shut is not it's not because they think that if Jesus comes out of heaven, which the Muslims believe is going to happen, they believe Jesus is coming back. You knew this, maybe. They think Jesus is the judge of mankind. He's not the Son of God. They just think he's one of the great prophets that will be the judge. But that's another whole story. So they're not trying to stop the Messiah or Jesus from coming out of heaven and coming in there. But what they are stopping is any kind of a Jewish zealot who gets himself a Netanyahu, gets himself a big following, and he gets himself some kind of an escort, and they ride in on that gate somehow, and everybody says, he came in the gate of the Messiah, this is the man. And it's happened several times in history where somebody would come in. It also happens on this Joppa gate, because there's prophecies of a great leader will come in through that western gate from the western world and will become a great leader. So when England, the British came in, they came in this gate, but they didn't come in on a horse or in a vehicle. The general walked in so as to not to fulfill the prophecy, but he did come in this gate. So that's why this gate is blocked shut, more for political reasons and political uprisings than to actually stop the second coming of the Lord. Because obviously all you have to do is, breathe on it and fall over. But it's more like so the Jews can't go down there every weekend and have a political rally and come in the western gate. That's why it's been blocked shut for years. And then you see the southern wall on the bottom of page 29. That's this southern wall down here. Again, just the photo of it. And you can see the black tarp there. They're constantly doing construction on this to make sure they maintain it. Because, of course, it'd still be standing. It's a rock wall. But different parts would be collapsing. So whenever something starts to break down, they're making sure the people of the area, they're working together to keep it established. Page 30, we're still going on the wall here. My goodness, you can see there's all kinds of details here. We're looking at the southern wall. You can see I've got a straight line drawn here. But you can see how it moves around a little bit. The Zion Gate is on the left side there. As you come down, then you're going to come to the Dung Gate. And I've got different pictures here. I could explain everything, but it may be very redundant. If you look on that first picture on the top left of page 30, you can see Tony there standing looking up at the wall like that. You see that? What you're looking at right there, just interesting, it's all filled in, but it's an aqueduct that runs right along the wall. You can see there's a little stack of straight blocks right on the sidewalk going up one, two, three, four courses of straight blocks. Then where the water would run, it's all filled in with rubble and broken rock. And then, of course, that would run right there. You can see where that aqueduct is. It's labeled on the map there at the top of the page. And some of those other features, including some mikvahs, are on here. Look at the top of page 31. Top of page 31, there are some mikvahs there. Mikvahs are ritual baths. They excavate, they're all over, hundreds of them, multitudes of them. Ritual baths all around this area that the Jews would use because they'd have to go through a process of cleansing to enter the Temple Mount or for their holy days. So if you had a holiday, it's Pentecost, it's Passover, it's some feast, you're going to have all these Jews coming to the city and they've all got to bathe. They've all got to dip in water to cleanse themselves. It was a big deal. They'd have to have baths almost everywhere. And when they excavated, I'm getting off subject here again, but all this ties together. This is the Temple Mound right here. This side of the Temple Mound are a series of stairs that you could come up. I'll show you this here in a minute. You could come up these stairs. You go through a double gate or a triple gate. The remains of them are still there. You can walk them, take photos of them. You can see them, touch them. There's no doubt about it. But when they excavated this area, it was amazing. Just mikvah after mikvah after mikvah, or ritual baths. They'd have two compartments, the left side and the right side, one side for the clean, one side for the unclean. So you could go down there and rinse off. And then you'd access these stairs and come into the double gate or the triple gate, and you'd come up some other stairs inside like a tunnel, and you'd surface on the Temple Mount, and there'd be the Temple Mount or the temple itself. Again, you're coming up Mount Moriah. When it says, let's go up to the house of the Lord, that's what they meant. Let's go up to the house. You're walking up Mount Moriah. But these ritual baths, they're everywhere. They'd have just a gown, and they'd dip in. I don't know the details, but they would just have some kind of gowns on. I don't know. I do not know. I don't know. I'd be making something up if I said any more. Yes, I was going to mention. I didn't know if I wanted to say something, get people confused. Is that on a blog or is that on? Okay, I put a blog up. You go to generationword.com. I got Galen's blog there on the left side. You click on that. I think it's the last blog I've got. There's a simulation. That's the word, a simulation, a computer simulation. And it starts right here on this road coming from Siloam. Now, you could dip in the water of Siloam, come out of the pool of Siloam and walk up this road. And when you come up here, you can see the stairs. You ascend the stairs, you go into the double gate, you ascend more stairs. You can still see, you can go in there. I can't get in there, you can't get in there, because the Muslims control it. It's now a mosque. And it's a holy site now. But you can go in there, and I've got photos of it, and you can see the remains of the ceiling that were there in Jesus' day. There's no doubt about it. Come up the stairs and come out on the Temple Mount. Okay, now that we're talking about that, let's see if I can find some pictures to show you. Go to page 151. Okay, here we go. Page 150. On page 150, we are standing in the city of David. We're standing right here, right where David's fortress would be. And we're taking a picture of, again, this is really a bad drawing, you see, but we're taking a picture of this side of the city. And there you can see those steps. Anyway, that's the southern one. You see the Dome of the Rock, but that's not the Dome of the Rock. That's the dome on the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Okay? But you're looking right here at the south side. Okay. Now, what you're doing is, if you remember the term, does anybody remember this? What is this area called right here? The City of David, Mount Moriah. This was called the Ophel. O-P-H-E-L. It's the Ophel. It's the area between these two parts, the City of David and the Temple Mount that Solomon built. When you look at the bottom picture on page 150, you're looking at the archaeological work they've done since 1967 of digging this up, excavating it. Now, on page 151, we are looking from the Mount of Olives over the Kidron Valley. I've zoomed in, and I'm taking a picture of this southwest corner. You see this corner right here? That's the corner that you can see right there, kind of in the middle of the or the right side of the photograph. Okay? So that wall that comes off of your photo going to the right is this wall right here. Am I making sense? Okay. Then it turns a corner and it goes across your page like this. Now you're cutting right across here. Okay? Actually, I'm going to draw this up here so we get it's right here like this. Cutting right across here like that. Okay? So now this is the corner. This is the Temple Mount right here. Up on top of here. And you can see the Temple Mount on the right side of the picture where it says El-Aqsa Mosque. That is the third most holy place of the Muslims. And it's sitting on the Temple Mount. It's sitting where Solomon's colonnade used to be. Okay? When we talk in the book of Acts, and they are in Solomon's colonnade, they are preaching, having daily meetings. They're always on the Temple Mount, having Bible class. The apostles were. They were right there. Okay? That is where they were at. That's where the church started. The church started right there. In fact, again, of course, you just go way back to the day of Pentecost. That's what we're talking about. They would have been probably over here in this part of the city. Probably in one of these houses just near Mount Zion. Maybe John Mark's mother's house. That's where the upper room was at, apparently. That's where they had the prayer meeting when Rhoda answered the door. Remember that story? And Peter came out of prison. John Mark's house. That could be. There's no reason why it should be. It doesn't have to be. But that was in this part of the city, right? There is a wealthy part of town. And that's where the disciples are going to meet because they got to meet in somebody's house. They're not going to meet, you know, in some little, you know, little apartment that holds four people. They're going to meet in some wealthy believer's house. That's where they're going to meet. It would have been over here. This is where the day of Pentecost happened. The sound, the wind, everybody came stumbling out and started speaking in other tongues. That would have happened probably in this part of town. They started preaching. Many people came. There's Jews from all countries that were there. They came to hear him preach. And they came, what's going on? And they preached them, gave them the message. And, you know, several thousand believed. Okay? Several thousand believed. And it says, Peter tells them, repent and be baptized. And they baptized them. Now the question is, where are you going to baptize several thousand Jews on an afternoon in the middle of the city of Jerusalem? Now you know the answer. Where are you going to baptize them? The mikvahs. And right over here, there's mikvahs all around here, but going up to the Temple Mount, these stairs right here are all kinds of mikvahs, big mikvahs. They're all over. So this, again, we don't have the details, but you know, something like this, they probably migrated over here and just started dunking people in the mikvahs. They went up to the Temple Mount. They're Jews. You know, I mean, they're Jews who just accepted Jesus the Messiah. They're not, well, now they're Christians. They're Protestants. We're going to go find a church. It's like, they're Jews who accepted Jesus the Messiah. And where's church? Right here. It's where they go to worship God. And the God in the temple is the same God who manifested as the Messiah in the flesh. And they're just waiting for him to come back. He's going to come back. He said he's going to come back. He's going to come back on the Mount of Olives right there. They're waiting for him to come back. And so they start having church services right here. And most of the Jews, you know, they don't, you know, there's not like a big conspiracy to get rid of the believers. They're like, they're just like you and me. Just, you know, it's like some kind of a church split, but it really was more like a national split. But nonetheless, now we're looking down here on page 151. And what you are looking at is the Temple Mount. You know where that's at, El-Aqsa Mosque. And then you can see on that wall, this wall right here, I've got two things pointing on there. One, I've got double gate, and I've got triple gate. And they were actually, they look like this, and we get some pictures of them. A double gate would have looked something like this. And you can still see the foundation stones, and they're still there. They're filled in. There's a double gate and a triple gate. Now, if you look in front of those, go down those steps. See that row of steps? Those are the temple steps. Now, right there on the triple gate, oh, man. Yeah, Acre, yep. The Acre right there, that's from the Seleucid. The Seleucid Empire, they built a fortress right there to oversee the Temple Mount. And when the Maccabees took over, they came and tore it down, bulldozed it. And all you got left there is some of the foundation in between. And the steps are on both sides, correct. As you come up those steps, the closest steps, you got steps on the far side of the Acre, and then you got steps right up close. One goes up to the double gate, one goes up to the triple gate. I've got a photo in here. I've got to show you, but I can't flip there now because I'll get too many things going. But on the triple gate, there is one of the stones right here. It's still got the details of the door jamb carved into the stone. You can see the carving right there. It's a beautiful, just the strips are right there. You can see it. This was, are you with me now? This was a very beautiful gate. This was called Gate Beautiful. And when people would come up those stairs to go, their steps inside here going up to the Temple Mount up here on the surface, they'd come up these stairs out of the mikvahs, they'd enter the beautiful gate, come up here and go to the Temple Mount. Continuous flow of people. There's a man, it's going to be a great place for a beggar to sit at Gate Beautiful. This is where Peter and John walked up. Silver and gold we do not have, but in the name of Jesus, stand up and walk. And they went up there running and leaping and praising God. And everybody gathered around. Right up here is where? Solomon's colonnade. It's right above the triple gate. So, I mean, it's all right there. So when you look at this right here, where it says Acra, you see those steps, and it says triple gate. That is, I mean, right here, boom, I'm touching it, I'm pointing at it. That is like 99% sure, unless, you know, all the history. That's where the blind or the lame man was healed by James and John, and they went up on the Temple Mount. Again, their stairs would come up there, and they'd surface on the Temple Mount there. That's where they would have their church services. So again, now, again, the mikvahs. I'm not sure if we can see. There's a large mikvah there. There's big mikvahs in there. But right down there in front of those stairs are just tremendous amounts of mikvahs where there'd be water. That is where they were baptized on that first day in Acts chapter 2. That is where the baptisms would have taken place. I mean, how do I know? Do we have photographs? Does the Bible say it was there? No, but it was in Jerusalem. They baptized thousands. Where's the water? When they got done, they went up to the Temple Mount. Where else, if you're a Jew and this is your holy site, where else are you going to go? I mean, you're going to come right over here. They were not thinking, we're now Christian Protestants, we're the Catholic Church. They're not even thinking that. They're thinking Jews. Nonetheless, bottom of that page, you can see these are some of the steps. They've been worn down. They've been weathered. You know, they're 2,000 some years old. Some of the steps you can see up there in the top left, they've been replaced so that you can still walk on them. Turn the page again. Page 152. My goodness, there's a good-looking man right there in that photo. At the middle of that photo right there, you see the guy there? And yeah, you guys see this? Okay, now you can see at where I'm standing, I'm leaning against a wall that comes out right here. Okay, is this making sense, my diagram here? Okay, it's not part of the Jewish temple. That is a crusader wall that they built up right against the double gates. You can only see one of the double gates. The other double gate is on the other side of that wall. Okay? And you can use it to come down into the other side of that wall. That is a crusader wall that they built. Once they took over Jerusalem, they built that wall to keep out the Muslims. Okay? Because the Muslims are going to, and they did take the city back, obviously. But again, now talk about no regard for archaeological, you know, there they're just using it for whatever. They just closed up the double gate that was used during Jesus' time, built a wall up against it, covered up the steps and says, we're going to be safest, the holy city. It's like, you know, why? Now, of course, that wall's archaeological remains from the Crusader time. But it's like, you know, that's not something we would want to do. You'd have to get permission. The bottom picture on page 152 is I'm standing right there at the double gate, looking down the steps, down towards the mikvahs, and you can see the Mount of Olives there in the background. So you can't see the Kidron Valley. It drops down and comes up over there. Let's go. The city of David would be to the right. And so you're just catching maybe the part of the city of David. But yeah, the city of David would be right to the right of that. Mm-hmm. Right. Yep. Yep. That hill in the background of that picture going up, those are all Jewish tombs. Just, I mean, even recent ones. I mean, that's where the Jews come to Jerusalem to die. Many of them do. So they can be buried on the Mount of Olives. Because in their theology, this is where now watch. If you're a Muslim, judgment takes place in the Kidron Valley. If you're a Jew, the Messiah is going to come to the Mount of Olives, and that is where he will raise the dead from the Mount of Olives right there, so you want to be buried there. If you're a Christian, what do you think? You think that's where Jesus is going to come to the Mount of Olives, and he's going to have the sheep and goat judgment right there. We're in line with the Muslims and the Jews. We all think the Jews call him the Messiah. The Muslims accept that he's Jesus, and we call him, you know, Jesus. That is where. So all three of the world's major religions are all waiting for the Messiah, or Jesus, to come here to judge them. It's kind of like, well, there may be other opinions. What would they be? It's like there's nothing left. You're either Jewish, Muslim, or Christian. You could be, you know, Buddha or something like that. But it's like all the majority of the people think that is where the Messiah is going to return. It's kind of interesting. Now, we're on a roll here, and I want to keep going. Okay, you see that double gate on page 152. I'll have to wrap this up. Again, here's my notes from last week. I haven't got through them yet. I can cross out number 2. Okay. There we go. On those going up those steps on page 152, you see the double gate. Now, if that wasn't walled shut and you could walk up the stairs and come out on the Temple Mount. Do you understand what we're talking about when I say that? It's like you go into the gate, but the temple isn't right there. You've got to go upstairs to surface up on the top. I don't know. I'm trying to think. In fact, look on page 153. On page 153, the bottom picture on the left, I am standing in front of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, and I'm looking down a stairway. I'm standing right here looking down a stairway. At the end, if I go down that stairway, and I'd have to move fast. I'd have to run. I could go down into the double gate. Now, it would be the last thing I probably did, but and you'd have to get my camera to see the photos, but you could go down and stand on the... Here it's walled, the double gate is walled shut. On this side where I'm standing on page 152, I'm standing with my back against there, or not my back, but you see the double gate, it's walled shut. If I would go down those stairs on page 153, I'd be on the other side of the wall. I'm on the Temple Mount, I'd just go right down. Okay, does that make sense? It goes down, and of course I've never been there. It goes down there, you can actually see the wall. Now if you go down there, again, it's originally wider. If you go down there and you actually stand inside the double gate, like right out on the other side of this wall would be the steps, and you look up from what I've been told and what I've seen, and you can see video of it, you can see the decorations from Herod's temple of Jesus' day. It's a domed ceiling with decorations. It hasn't got any people or any animals. There'll be a lot of, because that'd be against the Jewish law, a lot of floral, you know, flowers arranged or, you know, coloring up there in the ceilings. It's all there. Yeah. I could have done it. you don't know who, you know, even on the Temple Mount, me and Tony would talk and we'd be like, well, let's wait until we get home. Because you don't know, hear you talking, you know. In fact, we were up in Galilee looking over into Jordan and we were there. And he says, do not take your cameras off the bus. Don't even lift them up to the window. Don't even let your cameras be seen because we will be stopped. He says, and we're going to go out and take a look, and I will advise you that whatever you say out here, it's this viewing point, you're just viewing over. He says, whatever you say will be heard. He says, they're listening to you, right? They're listening to me give you this instruction right now. They can hear you. They've got microphones, and high-sensed microphones, picking up your conversations. It would be both sides. Jordan, watching what's going on over there, because that's a very sensitive border. Yeah, it'd be the military on one side or the other. But yeah, so he says, don't. Tony and I got in trouble a couple times. What do you expect? I mean, how do you think I got all these pictures? It's like, you got to take a chance. But innocently, one night, we went down, we left the city. We're going to go up to the New Jerusalem up here. And, we'd just gone to Washington, D.C. with the 8th graders a few weeks before that and took them out there from the school I work at. And we took pictures of everything. We saw pictures of the embassies of all different countries, taking photos. Well, we were walking down the street, and as we're walking down the street, we see right there, it says, United States Embassy. It's like, so I go, well, get a picture. So Tony takes the camera, and I step out on the road right here like this, and I'm going to stand. It says U.S. Embassy behind me, and Tony, she's getting ready to take the picture, and as I step out on the road, a guy comes out of nowhere, street clothes, comes up, can I see your camera? It was the United States military. He says, she said, I didn't take a picture. And he said, well, let me see. So he flipped through the pictures quick. He said, fine, you can have it. But he was going to do, he was going to take our camera, because you can't take a picture of the United States Embassy right here. 10:30 at night. It was the strangest thing. It is like, and so, yeah. So people are, I mean, it's, you think you're by yourself, but you're not. Okay, we got to quit. Turn the page. Turn the page. Oh, no. I was going to show you something else there. But if you look through those other pages, go to page 156, 157. We'll get back here sometime. Yeah, there it is. Go to page 156, 157. There's the remains of the triple gate going up the stairs. There's a Hebrew inscription on page 156 at the top right there on the wall. Here's what I want you to see, page 158. 158. There's three photos of it. I got to get a better photo next time. But that is right here on the triple gate. That is this part. This is that stone right there. It's got the, still got the carving in it. From those are original stones. So the walls, but remember, a lot of this was knocked over by the Romans, and then it had to be rebuilt. So a lot of those stones are still the original Herodian stones. Anyway, many, many things there. Many, many things. Okay. I appreciate you coming. It'll mean a lot to me if you come back. I'm going to pray, and we'll be done. Grab some books if you want to. Or if you got a friend that you say, hey, you get a book for your friend, that's great. Take one for him. Father, we thank you for the chance to look into these things. We thank you for the truth that you preserve for us in your word, but also the archaeological evidence that you've given to us. Father, we look forward to the reality of your word taking place in our lives and in the future. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you very much. Yes, ma'am. Yes. Okay. In what sense? I mean, yep. Yeah, it could. I guess I'm kind of waiting for that to take place in that 7 years of where it, just like Jesus says, there'll be wars and rumors of wars, there'll be famines, earthquakes. That doesn't mean they're all, that we're in the end times. It's going to happen. And the land of Israel's been divided and parceled out since 70 AD. Then the Romans get in 135. And then the Byzantine, the Christians came in and took over in the Byzantine Empire. Then the Muslims took it in 600. And then the Christians took it back in the Crusaders' time. Then the Muslims took it back. And there's been Muslims fighting against Muslims from Egypt or Turkey trying to see who's going to be in control of Jerusalem. You know, and I think that is just the way history is going. It's Jerusalem, I think, is being trampled on until the time of the Gentiles is fulfilled. That's what Jesus said in Daniel, it began in the days of Nebuchadnezzar. But I think that verse, again, the way I see it, is that's talking specifically about the man, Antichrist, who during that first 3.5 years of the tribulation, after he signs that 7-year treaty with many, he will then, the first 3.5 years, he'll start just political, you know, manipulating, taking three kings will be taken out. He'll replace them. He'll take the land of Israel. Now watch. He'll take the land of Israel and he'll divide it and give it to people to rule for him, because he's like an emperor, like, you know, Caesar was an emperor with King Herod as the king. He'll divide it up. But remember, at the 3.5-year mark, he's been attacked by the king of the south from Egypt, the king of the north. And then he goes out and fights the king of the south, apparently, in the first 3.5 years, the Antichrist. He's not in Jerusalem because he's divided it up. He's divided the land of Israel up. We can see it happening politically, like you say. But he defeats the king of the south, and when he does, he hears reports from the east and realizes, I'm in trouble, and he comes into Jerusalem and takes occupation of it at the 3.5-year mark because he needs it as a political base and a military base to fight the king of the east and whatever else is going on from the north, and that is when he occupies it. So I think that verse, although we can see it taking place today in different ways, but it's been going on for 2,000 years, is specifically talking about the Antichrist in that first 3.5 years of dividing things up and divvying them out to people who will give him some kind of political finances or support, and you can rule this part of the land. But at the 3.5-year mark, he shuts it down and says, I'm now in charge. I've got to get this thing under control. That's the way I would read that. But again, it is a serious verse, especially when you consider how easily it could happen by tomorrow morning. I mean, certain things like that. Yes, ma'am. You guys can stand up and walk out if you'd like to. Yes, ma'am. Oh, definitely. Definitely. Yep. Yep. Yeah. It's a, and the Jews are going to be welcoming him as a political